Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Putting your affairs in order before you die is the topic of this edition of Radio Curious. Our guest is Maggie Watson, a professional organizer who lives on the Mendocino Coast here in Northern California. She's the author of A Graceful Farewell, Putting Your Affairs in Order, a collection of forms that make it easy to list what a person owns and identify where everything is. In the course of our conversation, Maggie Watson turned the microphones and began to ask me about estate planning, the documents which are useful for everyone to have, and the differences between a will and a trust. In my day job, I work as an attorney in Ukiah, California, and devote a portion of my law practice to estate planning, so we talked somewhat about that. Maggie Watson and I met in the studios of Radio Curious in early December 2006. Maggie Watson, welcome to Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry. It's great to be here.
In looking at your book, A Graceful Farewell, Putting Your Affairs in Order, what I see is a collection of information and data that a person should have together before they die. I find that in my work as an attorney doing estate planning for people. A lot of people don't know where their things are. And sometimes relatives of someone who recently died comes in and I say, we need these things, they'd be helpful, and they don't know where they are. Your book appears to put them all together in a single folder with lots of options. So my question is, what prompted you to write a book like this?
So that's a great question, and I like telling the story. I had two friends in the Bay Area who are very close to me, and one of them was in the hospital actually dying of a long illness that he had. And when I was down visiting, he asked me if I could be of great service to his partner when the time came, and the time came about a month later. And I got the call, and I headed down to the Bay Area. And what happened was we were sitting around the dining room table, and my friend brought out this notebook that his partner, who had just passed away, had put together, and in it was all of the things that my friend needed to take care of everything. Life insurance policy, bank statements, where all of the paperwork were located. It was all in this notebook, as well as what needed to happen after his partner died. And I sat there, and I'm a professional organizer, and I thought, this is a fabulous thing for people to have. And that's what started it. So being in a situation where someone was actually dying and had left this wonderful gift of a notebook directing people, directing his partner of what to do. And that's how it started. And then I started using it with clients. And it went from there.
So in putting your affairs to order, like I said, I often suggest to people that they provide a list. Not that anything's going to be done with it during their lifetime, but it would be used after their death. Because otherwise, you have to go looking. And where do you look and what do you look for? So tell us about the lists and the information that you have suggested that people gather.
Well, I suggest people gather personal information, social security number, where driver's license number, where those documents are located. I suggest people go through all of their financial data, which includes bank accounts, savings, CDs, assets such as stocks and bonds. I suggest people look at their safety deposit box, where that is and what bank it's in and where the location of the key is.
And what's in the box.
And definitely what's in the box. There's a place to write what's in the box there. I also suggest people go through all of their insurances. We have a variety of insurances these days, from health, car, auto, home, life, disability, all kinds of insurance. And then also final wishes and what people want to do regarding how they want the end of their life to be. I also have a section in here for people who are self-employed and people who are employed, but specifically for people who are self-employed, because that oftentimes is another source of confusion when people die and they're self-employed. Where are all the records regarding their business? So that's some of the lists. And then at the final part of the book, I have just a specific list that says document location and checklist. And this goes through everything with some lines at the end for where, if there's things missing that you need to fill in. So it's pretty comprehensive. And that's what I want people to really look at, the comprehensive look at their life.
Maggie, I understand that you have looked into funeral homes and looked into the concept of a burial at home versus what a mortuary can do. Tell us about that.
My friend Allison asked if she could have a home funeral. And by that, what that means is that a person dies in their home, or possibly dies in the house, in the hospital, and then they're brought home, and that they are taken care of by their loved ones in the home, and that they never get to go to a mortuary. That the loved ones in their life, whether it be family or friends, do all of the necessary activities that need to be done. For instance, wash the body, transport the body to the burial site or the crematorium, do all the paperwork that is involved with those things. And so my friend Allison asked me if I would do that for her, and I did. It was in 1998, and it was an incredible experience. It started me on this wonderful path of learning how to be an empowered person around people who are dying, and it was really wonderful. We transported Allison's body in the back of a VW van, and we took her to the crematorium, and the family and friends that were there actually lifted the box out of the VW van and put her body in the crematorium, and no one who was not a loved one touched her in any way.
How about home burials?
If a piece of land has a cemetery on it, then that's fine. If it doesn't, what I've been told is that it takes about 2 years for a piece of land to be established as a burial site, a family burial site, and the paperwork is tremendous, is what I've been told.
There's a significant impact on the survivors of the person who's died when the survivor has the information that can be listed through the various forms in your book, A Graceful Farewell, Putting Your Affairs in Order.
That's true.
So what does that impact?
It impacts people's ability to go through the death process and the grieving process with relative ease. I have found people say to me that when their loved one dies and all of the paperwork is there, they can be with their loved one, be with the loved ones that are left, and not have to worry about where to find things. They can experience the sadness and the grief and not have that intense worry about what is going to be called upon for them to produce, because it's all there, or it could be found easily enough. And families are able to pull together more. The other aspect that I find so positive about this is that I'm from a family of 10 children, and my mom and dad are still alive. We have some of my siblings are Catholics. Some are very strong Catholics and have really specific requests for how they want themselves to die. And I'm not a Catholic. And so in my family, if my mom and dad did not specify how they wanted to be taken care of after they died, there would be a huge disagreement with our family about how that will take place. And this is the kind of thing that can be avoided. And that's the most important thing we can do for our loved ones.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're talking with Maggie Watson, a professional organizer who lives in Little River, California, about her book, A Graceful Farewell, Putting Your Affairs in Order. This book, which has a CD enclosed, has many fill-in forms about assets and desires that, in my opinion, would be pretty useful for any person who is about to die or will die, which includes all of us. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel.
Barry, can I ask you a few questions as an estate attorney?
Sure.
In your work, you see many people who are interested in figuring out what they need to do to put their affairs in order. What are the key documents you see needs to be put in place?
The documents are several. One that I think everybody should have, regardless of their assets, their marital status, or whether they are a parent, is a durable power of attorney for health care. That allows a person to name someone to make health care decisions for them when they can't make them for themselves, and determine the conditions under which they would like to die if they're in a near end-of-life situation. At home, in a hospital, quickly, with no pain, no maintenance on life support, or extensive life support maintenance, even if there is a bare glimmer of hope and they're willing to suffer the pain, or anywhere in between that. Mm-hmm. Then the question is if they own assets. There's a durable power of attorney for asset management, which allows someone to make decisions about assets for you when you cannot. Some of those are called springing durable powers of attorney. They spring into effect when you lose the ability or the capacity to make decisions for yourself. And they're durable in that, unlike the normal power of attorney, which lapses when a person loses the capacity to understand that the document exists, this stays in effect during the period of incapacity. All powers of attorney terminate when a person dies.
Some people have asked me about if they're taking a long trip, should they have a durable power of attorney for financial matters, and I always recommend they talk to their lawyer. What would you say in that case?
Probably. Mm-hmm. If someone's going to be out of the country for a long time and there is a need to sell something in their home or to change assets, and they've given the document to someone they trust, they can give that person verbal instructions and the person mm-hmm. can execute it on their behalf. Mm-hmm. Deeds, conveyances, mortgages, transfer bank accounts, buy and sell stock, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. What about after death? What are the key documents that need to be put in place to secure the wishes of someone who has just died?
Well, that depends on a person's status and assets. My opinion is that if a person is married or has children or owns property, that person would benefit from a will and perhaps a trust. A will is a document that can be typewritten and witnessed by two people who watch the testator, that's the person who signs the will, sign it and witness it, and all three people have to be together when all three people sign in the same room. A handwritten will, called a holographic will, can be written privately by the testator, the person who's making the will, if it's all written in their own handwriting and it's signed and dated and made in California. So question is, how do you know it's made in California? Well, that's easy. You put the town and the state where you make it. Then there's the question about how about stationary store form wills that are written by hand, or the blanks are filled in by hand, and part of them are forms. Those count as a holographic will signed by the testator.
Mm-hmm. What about books like Nolo Press's estate planning books?
Well, those are generally good from what I've seen. I would compare those books to books about how to tune up your car. Mm. If you understand it and you feel comfortable doing it and you're willing to spend the time to tune up your car and it runs well, that's fine. The difference is that you don't know if your will was properly drawn until it comes time to probate it or implement it. And at that point, it's too late to go back and fix it. Whereas if your car breaks down, you can say harumph and either go back and fix it yourself or engage a mechanic to fix it for you. Either way, it's a comfort level issue. Some people prefer to keep all of that information private and not consult others. I think that there's nothing wrong with that, but I also think that there's a lot of benefit from consulting a professional who knows the broad spectrum of the issues and knows what questions to ask and how to achieve the person's goals. When I counsel people about estate planning, I ask them what they want to do with what they have. Most people who have children leave everything to their spouse and then to their kids. But I always like to ask, are there any particular organizations that you believe make the world better? And have you considered leaving them any money? Mm-hmm. Most people who don't have children have a long list of those kinds of organizations with various percentages of their assets going to an organization that they think is appropriate that they would like to continue to support.
Mm-hmm. You've spoken about different kinds of wills. Can you talk a little bit about trusts?
Well, a trust is something that some people who have a will might want to have. A trust is an artificial entity, much like a corporation or a partnership. What it does is it holds title to the assets, a real property, perhaps a business, a money market, certificate of deposit, stocks and bonds that somebody might own. And the people who create the trust are called the settlors or the trustors. They settle the trust or they develop the trust. In almost all cases, they're also the trustees. That means that they're in charge of it. They manage the trust, they drive it, they control it, they make decisions about it. And in almost all cases, they're the beneficiaries of the trust. They benefit from what the trust holds. Like a house, they benefit from living in the house. Like a bank account, they benefit from the money and the things that you can purchase from having the bank account. There is also a category of successor trustees, because at some point the beneficiaries are going to die, and there'll be the original beneficiaries are going to die, and there'll be new beneficiaries who come into place who will benefit from the assets of the original organizers of the trust, often the spouse or the children or the organizations that they like. If the beneficiary and the trustees are the same person and the beneficiary / trustee dies, we need a successor trustee to manage and drive the trust and distribute the assets. And we sometimes need those prior to the time that the beneficiary dies, in a situation where if a beneficiary can't handle or manage or be the trustee, someone else has to step in. Dementia, accident, or I've had enough. I don't want to do it anymore. I just mm-hmm. want to be the beneficiary. And those are all named in the trust. Mm-hmm. Because a trust is an artificial entity, it has to be given certain abilities and duties and authorities. The ability and authority and the duties that you and I have as adults living in California is set out by the state legislature. An adult may do the following things: buy and sell land, enter into mortgages, any kind of business arrangement. But if you create an artificial entity like a trust, you have to be able to empower the trust with what it can do. Mm-hmm. That's why they're long documents. Mm-hmm. A will can be a short document. It says who you are, who you're married to if you are, who you are married to if you had been but aren't now, who your kids are, and what you want to do with your assets. And you can give all your assets, the operative word being all, to one person or a group of people, share and share alike among my kids, for example, or everything to my spouse. Or you can give your assets out item by item. This book goes to one person, and that book goes to another person, and a third book goes to the other person, and the bookshelf goes to whomever. Identify things by item by item or category.
I've heard of estate mills, basically places where people can go and have a group, have someone take over doing the estate planning for them instead of going to a lawyer. What have you heard about those?
Who's running this program? I thought I was the host of Radio Curious, but that's a good question. That's similar to the analogy of getting a book on how to tune up your car. Mm-hmm. My experience with those are that they have a uniform document and they fill in the blanks for people and they talk to a class. Come in and sit down and we'll answer all of your questions, and you should sign up with us now because you will save a lot of money in probate, which you will. Probates can be expensive, and I want to talk about the difference between administering an estate through a will and a probate versus administering estate through a trust. Trust mills, or companies where they go out to groups or invite people to come to a hotel for a luncheon and hear a speech, are not personalized, in my experience, from having visited them. It's not an opportunity for someone to get the one-on-one consultation and the one-on-one information about what would best work for you. Somewhat akin to reading a newspaper article saying, this is a great business to buy stock in, and you should do it because. The writer of that article is selling the stock. The promoters of the trust mill are selling the trust mill, and they'll tell you that this is a wonderful thing, and it may be. Mm-hmm. From time to time, when I see that kind of document brought to my office by the heirs of someone who recently died, often there are holes, often there are areas of incompleteness and unanswered questions. Sometimes they're very complex and leave an important aspect undecided, which means we have to go to court to resolve it. Mm. And sometimes there are issues that can be covered. Really depends on how much personal attention someone wants. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you're part of a large group and part of a class, it is less expensive than if you get one-on-one personal attention.
Right. I've been an executor and a trustee for two different estates, and the differences were vast. Can you speak a little bit from your experience of what the differences are?
Well, you're an executor when you execute the decedent's wishes through the probate proceeding in a court proceeding, through the court. You petition the court to give you authority to do what the decedent asks to be done through the will. A trustee in a successor trustee in a trust does the same thing. The difference is this. A probate proceeding can be expensive, and it takes a minimum, if everything moves along quickly, of 5 to 6 months if you start right when the person dies. There's a mandatory 4-month waiting period so that someone who claims that the person who died owes money to make the claim, to try and collect on the debt. There's also a waiting period for the administration of a trust, but the difference is administering a trust is a private event. It doesn't get the court supervision. So it's private, people don't know about it, it's not public, like if someone wants to go to the courthouse and read the documents. But if someone protests, then they have to take it to court to get court supervision of the trust. Mm-hmm. If the person who is the trustee messes it up, either intentionally or negligently, there isn't that protection unless a beneficiary wants to take it to court. The administering of a trust is a lot less expensive and it's private. Mm-hmm. Preparing a trust is more expensive than preparing a will, but every trust needs a will. And every set of estate plans, in my opinion, also need the two powers of attorney, asset management and health care that we've talked about.
people have spoken about a document called a pour-over will. Is that the same kind of document you were talking about?
Well, a pour-over will is what you have with a trust. Mm-hmm. And that says the assets that are not in the trust, I pour over into my trust and make part of my trust, and they're distributed under the terms of my trust. Maggie Watson, when we started this interview about your book, A Graceful Farewell, I don't think either of us had any idea that you'd be asking me questions, but my turn.
Okay.
Can you tell us about an interesting book that you read lately?
I'm reading two books right now. One is called The Millionth Circle, How to Change Ourselves and the World by Jean Shinoda Bolen. And the other book that I am just finishing is called The Tipping Point, How Little Things Can Make a Big Difference by Malcolm Gladwell. How about you, Barry? What interesting books are you reading lately?
Well, I think the most interesting book that I've read on the top three of all of them in my collection and all of my Radio Curious interviews, and I'd love to interview Lyle Watson, the author of Jacobson's Organ. He lives on the west coast of Ireland, and he's not doing interviews. But he wrote a book about our ability to perceive odors and smells. Mm-hmm. And the fact that our nostrils are direct lines to our brain. And his book starts out with the ability of single cells to perceive odors and more complex cells, both in the animal and in the plant kingdoms. Mm-hmm. And he ends it by talking about how we as Homo sapiens, perceive smells. And for any of us, if you smell something that you smelled regularly as a small child and you smell it as an adult, you immediately go mm-hmm. right back to that place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had that happen.
Well, Maggie Watson, author of A Graceful Farewell, Putting Your Affairs in Order, thanks for joining us on Radio Curious.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Maggie Watson is a professional organizer based in Mendocino County here in Northern California, and is the author of A Graceful Farewell, Putting Your Affairs in Order. The books she recommends are The Millionth Circle, How to Change Ourselves and the World, The Essential Guide to Women's Circles by Jean Shinoda Bolen, and The Tipping Point, How Little Things Can Make a Big Difference by Malcolm Gladwell. The book I recommend is Jacobson's Organ and the Remarkable Sense of Smell by Lyle Watson. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. At Radio Curious, we appreciate hearing from you. Our email is curious@radiocurious.org. The snail mail is 700 West Smith Street in Ukiah, UKIAH, California, 95482. The phone is 707-621-5075. Ignacio Ayala is the assistant producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.